Hey friends, I know that you like podcasts because you're listening to this one, so I'd like to introduce you to another, the Merge Conflict Podcast. It's a weekly discussion with developers Frank and James on all things development, technology, and more. After years of being friends, Frank and James finally decided to sit down and start a podcast about their lives as mobile developers using Xamarin. Much more than just another mobile development podcast, Merge Conflict reaches all areas of development, including desktop, server, and of course, mobile. They also cover fun things happening in the world of technology and gaming and whatever else happens to be on their minds. Head to mergeconflict.fm to learn more or search for Merge Conflict in your favorite podcast app today to subscribe. Hi, I'm Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today I'm talking with Shande Persson. She is a UI engineer at SalesLoft, and she is a burgeoning teacher on the internet, doing work for Egghead Cafe and a bunch of different things. You've been blogging and doing all kinds of great stuff. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on, Scott.
So one of the things that I'm interested in talking about with you is the beginning of learning how to teach. I think we have lots of people talking about early in career folks learning how to learn. Mm-hmm. And we have lots of conversations around old heads that basically just teach naturally, but no one talks about the process of becoming a teacher. And I think that it seems from watching you on the internet, your articles on your blog, and also on Dev2, that that's what you're in the process of doing.
That's correct. Yeah. And I'm new-ish to teaching. I say new-ish because I think I've been teaching my entire career. And so I'm fairly new to engineering, but I had a robust career in sales before I moved over to engineering. And in sales, I was a teacher. So I use a lot of the techniques that I use to educate my customers on the products that we were selling or the brand new industry that we were breaking into, and teach them about the software that I was selling. I use those techniques to help to teach others technical skills and really focus on retention and thorough understanding of the fundamentals.
Interesting. So for you as a salesperson in your previous career, you really felt that that was a teaching role. Like there's people who are like trying to convince and that's the way that they sell. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you were an educating salesperson.
Yeah. Yeah. So in sales, like I was selling a lot of software, and there are people who will see salespeople as kind of convincers, and it's your job to get this person to buy something. The truth is, from my perspective, that you're trying to get them to change. So you're just trying to educate them on whatever the problem is, that maybe they don't know that they have a problem or life could be better doing something else. And you want to first provide value for them, and you're not able to do that without getting an understanding of who they are, what's important to them first, and then just kind of relating what you have. And everybody thinks that they're selling the latest and greatest breaking technology or something that nobody's ever seen before. And so your job is to convince them that through teaching them that your solution is different or better than what they have right now or what they could have going with a competitor. So I learned a lot about speaking and articulating, because the way that you understand what your software does isn't the way that the person on the other end of the line is going to receive that information. So I could think, okay, I have this amazing widget that helps people to make more money in as a head of sales, right? Head of sales is like, okay, well, I have a ton of widgets. Like, what makes your widget different? And if I'm focused on feature, most times they're not going to get it. So you need to relate what your offering is into what that customer or prospect would understand. And so a lot of those skills that I used in trying to educate my customers is the same type of thing that I leverage a lot when I'm teaching engineers different technical concepts as well.
That's a really sophisticated framework. I would think that naively, and I'm curious what the audience would think when they interact with us on social after this podcast goes live, is that they wouldn't think, I would guess, that a salesperson's skills would translate. But you expressed just now a very clear understanding of why it's important that you could express this is the difference between these two technologies. You're, you know, selling open source technologies now, or you're selling software techniques, or you're selling certain styles of coding. Mm-hmm. Did you know that that would be the case when you switched careers?
The case that there, I would
that you would be that. Able to that these skills would translate. It seems to me like having had already a very successful and somewhat long sales career, for you to then say, I'm going to do a totally different thing. Mm-hmm. I would have assumed naively that you'd be throwing out skills like, oh, none of these skills are useful.
Right. Yeah. And that was actually one of the reasons why it took me longer than I wish I had to actually move into engineering, because I felt like I spent about 12 years in sales. And I felt like I was kind of married to this career. Like I had a BBA, a bachelor's of business. I had an MBA. And then I had this extensive career, very successful career in sales, not to brag on myself or anything, but
you had me at MBA, by the way. So
thanks. I was winning awards for, exceeding my quota consistently. So it was like, why would I throw all this hard work away for something that is kind of an unknown? I didn't know that all of the skills would translate. And I think part of it is like I seek out these opportunities too, because I could just do the things that are in the job description, you know, get the code across, move the JIRA tickets from in progress to GA. But the truth is, too, there is a level of communication that you need to be able to have to be a good engineer and work on a team. And I think that my skills as a salesperson and communicating with my customers helped to kind of fill in the gaps. Like, I know that a lot of engineers will struggle with soft skills. Sales is a career that is essentially just soft skills. Like, you're working on problem solving, you're working on communication, you're working on like levels of empathy, understanding, all different kinds of soft skills. That's 100% what you need. So that's not an area, I mean, it's always an area that I need to continue to fine tune, but it was one of the areas that I was stronger in when I came into engineering. So I got to focus more on learning the technical concepts, and then just kind of figuring out where the communication, for example, would tie in with that.
I appreciate that you, without any prompting, brought up the concept of empathy, which I think is huge. It's like it's fundamental to my entire personality, which is literally putting yourself in the shoes of others. And as a teacher, it's so important. As a salesperson, it's so important. I think it's under-respected as an engineer, mm-hmm. whether you're talking to other engineers that are at the same level, a higher level, or who are, you know, earlier in their career than you are.
Yeah. And it's sad that I see there's a lot of people who have kind of a negative view of a lot of tech, the people in tech, because there are a lot of egos. I've been lucky enough to not have come across much of that. But there are people who kind of flaunt their technical knowledge as a brand. And this is my personality. This is who I am. I'm smarter than you because I can use more technical terms. And that's kind of what the complaint is. I think that the best, and those people, you know, sometimes are in positions as like teachers or people who have a big following, which is unfortunate. But I think the best teachers do have, like you said, that level of empathy where they help to first seek to understand where people get tripped up, what kind of questions they have about what languages they're using, or what languages they're trying to learn, what technologies they're using, and let that translate into the way that they teach.
When you are starting out as a early in career engineer, mm-hmm. I don't necessarily see people who are starting out in the first, you know, first, let's say 5 years of their career, immediately going on social, on a blog, starting their journey in public. A lot of people feel very kind of internalized, very focused on themselves and their own learning. And they think, I can't really blog about this. I don't know what I'm talking about. And certainly I'm not going to go become an instructor somewhere. You know, I'm just learning. But you did the exact opposite and immediately did both, learned and taught in public. Why?
And I will say that isn't something that I never got stuck on, where I didn't feel that imposter syndrome, like, everybody else has already done this before. What value could people get from what I say? So when I ever feel like that, I try to focus on, okay, I have a, I'll just tell my story, and nobody else's story is my story. I have a unique point of view. I have a unique experience. Or if I don't, that's okay, because it's going to resonate with someone else who is going through the same struggles. And when I was first starting out my career journey, like, I would have loved to be able to see somebody who is in the same type of position, somebody who was switching careers, coming from sales straight into engineering or something similar and going through similar obstacles. And I want to be that person for somebody else. So I kind of default to, okay, if I don't have to be the person that teaches everybody, I don't have to be the person who knows everything, just be the person that tells my story, and somebody will take something from it. And I've gotten a lot of great feedback, which kind of hypes me up to do more stuff too. And good feedback from people who say, oh, well, I'm so glad that somebody finally said this, because I was feeling the same way. I just didn't know how to say it. Or this is something that I didn't really understand, but the way that you broke it down help me to understand it differently. So there could be a million different articles about set state, but the way that I think about it, the way that I understand this specific type of tech, this certain concept is different than other people have been conveying it. So again, the focus isn't really necessarily on being different. It's just kind of telling my story and telling the way that I understand things. And it can be different enough just for one person to benefit from it. If nobody else benefits from it, I benefit from it, because I refer to my own works, my own blog posts and videos just as much as anybody else would.
The fact that you're also recognizing that when you blog and you put stuff out on the internet, that it allows you to refer back to your own stuff is like so fundamental. Like, I've been blogging for 20 years, not for the people, not for an audience. I do it for myself so I can Google myself later. I think I wrote about this once before. And sometimes I'll read it and I'm like, I don't remember writing any of this. Like, I don't know what I was talking about, but it was still the thing I needed to write.
And I'm glad that you said that too, because that was one thing that I was so afraid about. So it was kind of intimidating when first coming into this space, is that I thought that people like you, or people who, you know, have a lot of people who are great teachers, people who are who've been in the field, who know what they're talking about, I thought that they just knew everything about everything. They never made mistakes, and they had this like incredible background of knowledge of things that I would never ever remembered. Like, I'm the type of person who, if I don't code for one weekend, I completely forget everything I ever knew about JavaScript and React, and then I have to start from scratch. So I was like, I can never be this person. And as I'm building this course right now, I'm in the process of building out a beginner TypeScript course for Egghead. I'm learning so much about all of the background stuff that goes into prepping examples and learning the material. And I'm actually using it as an opportunity to learn more things, but also build this library for myself to reference of, all right, as I'm refactoring something for work from JavaScript to TypeScript, I'm referencing some blog posts that I wrote and notes that I took to help me to recall all the stuff that I've forgotten over the past night. So I'm glad that you said that.
One of the things that I'm also appreciate about you is that when you go to like your website, you say that you're a software engineer, you're a blogger, you're a speaker, and you actually call it Pretty Awesome Mom. And then if we go, for example, and look at one of your blog posts on React at your blog about set state, you're actually using toddler and teen and mom in the examples. And you're doing that unapologetically. Like, I feel like sometimes, you know, we, myself with two young idiots that I'm trying to raise in my house right now, when I use those examples, maybe they won't necessarily land with people, but this is who I am. So I'm going to use those examples. I thought it was really cool that you actually have like a temper tantrum function and you're passing emotions from the mom to the teen, because, and it totally works as an analogy. Hey friends, I hope you're enjoying this podcast, and I hope you take a look at one of our sponsors, CBT Nuggets. CBT Nuggets is an IT training online system for professionals and anyone really looking to build IT skills. It's kind of like Netflix for IT people. They've got lots of great stuff, but their core specialties are networking, cloud, and security, and they're putting up 40 hours of new training each week. Their entire trainer team is 100% in-house. They're all active IT professionals with multiple certifications. One of the great things that CBT Nuggets has that a lot of other folks don't have are virtual labs. These are actually on-demand virtual environments that are tailored to the course material that you're taking. And it allows you to actually practice networking configs, do scripts, run queries alongside the course. Best of all, accountability coaching. It's really hard to go and self-learn, but this service is available to all learners with a subscription. They have a coaching team that's integrated with their trainer and their content team, so you can talk to a real person at CBT Nuggets who will help you craft a personalized learning plan, set goals, and they'll check in with you to keep you accountable. And they've got a great 7-day free trial where you're going to get unlimited access to their entire training library. The promo URL is cbtnuggets.com/Hanselminutes. That's cbtnuggets.com/Hanselminutes.
Yeah. And I have realized that I love using analogies. That's the way that I understand things is through analogies. Even the way that I get people to remember how to pronounce my name, I always say it, pronounce it like a day of the week, Saturday, Sunday, Shonday. People just remember it when you give a story that they can relate to. So everything that I explain, I always find a way to tie it into something that people are already familiar with.
I've been Hansel and Gretelman, by the way, for a very long time.
I love it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I this kind of relates back to what we were talking about with sales, is that I try to connect things to things that people are already familiar with. So take what your understanding is right now and then just bring you one level above that, right? And I'll share a story with you too of when I was potty training my son. So I'll admit the first couple of days were so frustrating, so frustrating, right? And I'm trying to teach him. I'm like, why won't you just use the potty, right? And I called my mom. And I was like, listen, I know people are saying that kids get this in 3 days, right? But if this is on day two, I don't think he's going to understand this. And I don't know what to do. Maybe now is not the right time. Maybe we need to wait a couple months. She's like, listen, think about the way that you're teaching him. You're giving him a set of this terminology that he's never heard before. You're telling him to focus on a sensation that he has never focused on before. You're giving him a tool that he's never seen before. Just this potty appears in the bathroom and you're telling him to put it together and figure out what to do with it. She's like, you know, you need to really understand, think about where his level of understanding is and then just take him to the next step. And I was like, oh, duh. Like, this makes so much sense. Like, just he understands, like, okay, I can just show you. Like, he's never seen anybody use a potty. I can just show you, like, this is what you need to do. Just sit you down. So that's kind of what I want to be able to do with teaching is, you know, I don't want people to end up like so many people do, where you just given a tool, you get VS Code, you get these terms, this is a type, this is type inference. And just figure out what to do with it. And why aren't you so smart to be able to figure it out on your own? You know, you need to take people, understand where their level of understanding is, and then take them to the next level. So that's what I like about using analogies is like, okay, everybody understands the family dynamic. You know, a mom and a teen and a toddler, you know how they fit together. So I'll take these technical terms and then I'll put it into terms that you already understand. And then we can apply all the little jargon, the set state, and, you know, this is a function, this is props and all that stuff. And you can inject it in there once you have the fundamental understanding. So that's why I love analogies so much.
So I want to make sure that you know that you've just committed to writing me an article called React, the Potty Training Perspective, that I expect you to write and have a link for me that we'll put in the show notes of this
That is a show. Great idea. I'm all for it.
All right. Excellent. We'll be looking for that. And you can find the link to that yet to be written blog post in the show notes. One of the things that I thought was really good, and I think it's a good reminder to everyone who is listening to this podcast who maybe hasn't done a blog, is sometimes it's okay to make declarative statements and ask controversial questions. I was impressed that, again, as an earlier in career person, you just wrote a blog post a couple weeks ago called TypeScript, What's the Point? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's aggressive. What's the point? Like that idea of asking a question and answering a question, and then you continue to ask questions throughout the blog post. That's kind of the Socratic method, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so this is part of my buildup for announcing this TypeScript course that I'll be coming out with hopefully by the end of the summer. But I'm learning a lot more TypeScript. I'm using TypeScript in more in my role at SalesLoft. And one of my beginning questions is like, okay, this is annoying. TypeScript is really annoying. Like all you get is red squigglies and I'm doing all this work for what, you know? And in my head, and I know I can't be the only one with the same feelings about it. I know in my head, I'm like, why, what is the point? So, I want to think of ways that I can help to answer questions that people are kind of afraid to ask. Or when you're looking up TypeScript, like when I'm Googling TypeScript, I want to know why it's so annoying. What is the point of it? And I want to help other people to understand that too. So that was kind of my goal in it is, and I'll come out with a lot of provocative stuff just because it's kind of the way that I think. It's like, I'm not going to think in, you know, is type inference better? I mean, maybe I will down the line, but is type inference better than explicitly declaring things? No, you know, in the beginning, this is kind of what you want to know is like, why am I even using this? What are my other options? Should I be trying to get around this or should I be trying to convince my manager that we need this? So.
One of the things that I think is interesting for us to talk about, because we're in different places in our career and we started on different languages. Mm-hmm. So you started with a, and I'm quoting from your blog post here, a carefree life of declaring variables without worrying about their future, what they'll become or the functions that they have to interact with. Well, I started in C, mm-hmm. allocating my own memory and basically just getting slapped by the compiler every few minutes. And I'm just imagining you just like, woohoo, you know, var cupcake equals whatever. Like, I don't even care. Woohoo.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
So here we are, you know, two people coming from, you know, we're kind of trying to drill a hole in this mountain. We're coming from totally different directions. Mm-hmm. And you're describing that TypeScript as a statically typed language is squiggling. And I'm thinking, you're complaining about spell check. like, why is Microsoft Word putting all these squigglies here? Because mm-hmm. you're wrong. Right? Why don't you like that structure? Because I'm like, structure, more structure.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's more of a creativity thing or what, or just kind of like, you know, man against the government or whatever. But I liked the freedom of just being able to kind of be wrong and stuff. And then just being like, you know, YOLO and seeing what happens at the end.
That is it right there. JavaScript is the YOLO language. And
that's
TypeScript
the next blog post.
Yes. I got to write that one down too. Java, you got to do these quickly before people hear the show. And otherwise they're going to beat you to it or I'll beat you to it. I'll write the blog post myself.
Yeah. Please don't. I look for it. I'm going to.
So you got two blog posts you got to do now. So
this is great. Yeah. I think I love the freedom. And I see a lot of the comments on that TypeScript, What's the Point article, right? People are like, yeah, people who are used to JavaScript and being able to type freely, it's not anything that we ever had to think about was the red squigglies or being wrong and finding that out at compile time. So it's kind of like the parent, you know, and it's like, yeah, okay, I see you were right. You're right. I know I wasn't listening. I should have listened this whole time, but now that you're here, now that I understand what the purpose is, I don't see my life without you kind of thing. So, most of the people who commented on that post came there to say like, you might reject it if you came from a JavaScript world. You might reject TypeScript or statically typed languages. But once you've crossed that bridge and figured out why and how, you know, there's no going back. People love it.
Yeah. At Microsoft, where I work in my day job, there's this concept that they use internally called the developer's inner loop. Mm. It's like a for loop, but there's your loop. And your loop is you type, you hit save, you go to the browser, you hit F5. Right? Mm-hmm. So, and then if you put on like a watch, if you like run a watch, you hit save and then you wait for the thing to recompile and it hits, mm-hmm. you know, F5 for you. Or if you use like a module loader or whatever, you hit save and then it loads the module hot. TypeScript moves that thing left, right? It's called shifting left. Mm-hmm. So it's like, as you're typing, it's doing the thing that you wouldn't have found out for way downstream.
Exactly. Yep. And that's pretty much it in a nutshell. Just keeps it more maintainable over the long term. JavaScript is great. And I'm not going to knock JavaScript because it's, you know, where I came from. That's like, you know, knocking my hometown or something. Like I love JavaScript. And TypeScript is JavaScript. It's a superset of JavaScript. But it's, if you're working with other people, if you're working on something, like we talked about before, and you forget how to code over the weekend, like I do frequently, it helps you to, you know, be able to come back, pick up where you left off and not make mistakes, or just know kind of what to put into what so that things will work when you go through and hit F5 or run your stuff.
It's good that you're pointing out that we do forget stuff. Like I haven't written a regular expression in like 3 months. So like I've overwritten those brain cells with other stuff, like my kids' birthdays and their important stuff about my kids. Sure. And then I got to go and dig it out of the archive. Oh, crap. I got to write a regular expression again. Mm-hmm. That's just, it's okay to do that. Like unless you're writing code or exercising every single day, you're going to forget that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like that. I'm getting more comfortable too in my life, just like making mistakes in public or just letting people find out that I'm not perfect in public. So, and I know nobody's perfect, but for me, this has been kind of a challenge my entire life I was growing up just, you know, Little Miss Perfect and had to get straight A's and get the extra credit and always be buttoned up. And, it was just kind of unnecessary stress that I put on myself. And this is part of teaching, is that when you are in a position as a teacher, or a mentor or just a human being, it's okay to make mistakes. And actually, I think we should be more inviting of people making mistakes in public, like, you know, like little mistakes here and there. And it helps people to see that, okay, this isn't something tech engineering. This isn't something that isn't for everybody, or this isn't something that's not approachable for other people. You don't have to be perfect to be in here. We all make mistakes no matter what point we are at our career. We could be coding at Microsoft and doing huge things and still be making mistakes every day. So
what would you say for someone who might be listening, who might say that I, Scott, given my age, my background, my experience, has a privilege or more of an ability to make a mistake in public without someone kind of flipping the bozo bit on me. Mm-hmm. And you and your demographic and background, as well as being early in career, could cause someone to jump on you and say, ha ha, you're not a real dev. You made a mistake in public. But you just said that you welcome people to make mistakes in public. Have you found that? Or what do you think about that comparison?
I'm actually glad that you brought that up. So I think that, yes, you do have a privilege where people won't come out of the woodwork as much and say, okay, you know, you don't know what you're talking about because, you know, you made this one silly mistake. However, so I think that probability wise, I'm more likely to get some backlash on that stuff. However, if I think about as a young Black woman, I'll say I'm young. I'm still young. As a young Black woman.
Hey, I say I'm still young too. So you do you.
That's right. As a young Black woman, entering engineering, right? If I bring myself back to then, the type of person that I would want to see is someone who looks like myself, who isn't perfect. So I don't necessarily, I mean, having someone who is perfect, who is a young Black woman in engineering, doesn't make me any less apt to get into engineering. But I would also like to see that, okay, she's going through struggle. She has these obstacles that she faced, and she's able to deal with the hecklers or the tech bros and all that kind of stuff in this certain way. It may be different than the way that you deal with them, or it may be different from the tech bros that you get. But I would like to see the complete person. And I don't think that it should detract anybody in a position who's not in a position of privilege from making mistakes in public. I think they should be encouraged to do that, because there's other people looking at that.
I think that's very well said. I think one of my good friends, Grace Mack Jones, said that she wants to normalize normal people being in tech. And I think that that's really what we're talking about, is making it so people have a safe place to fail, that we can talk about imposter syndrome. We can still be really awesome. We can still kick butt and be like Angie Jones, and everything that we say is a genius thing.
Yes.
But also make mistakes and not have someone say that that destroys 10 years or 20 years or 30 years of experience because, oh, look, Hanselman doesn't know how lately, you know, strongly typed dynamic languages work. People are humans, right? Follow the whole person.
Exactly.
100%. Yeah. So you're writing a course right now for egghead.io. You're working on a TypeScript course coming out later in the summer. Mm-hmm. So if you're listening to this later in the summer, we'll go back and update this information with links to that as well. Sure. What else do you have cooking up?
So that you can, I actually have, you can sign up. It's not a robust website just yet, but if you go to TypeScript4JSDevs.com, you can sign up to get notifications about when the course is available. So do sign up for that. I am also a React Ladies community leader. So this is a community for women and people who identify as non-binary, who are new or in React, the React world, and wanting to learn more. We are getting ready to put together, or we're putting together our kickoff event for the summer of 2021. So find React Ladies on Twitter. And then me, I'm just on Twitter tweeting about kids. I tweet about TypeScript and the joys and the struggles of engineering. And those are the things that keep me busy. And then my three-year-old keeps me pretty active.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Shonday Person, for chatting with me today.
Thanks, Scott. Good to be here. Bye.
You can find Shonday on Dev2, on GitHub, on Twitter. And again, we'll put all the information that you need in the show notes. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.